Welcome to the Business Trend Center podcast, where we talk about trends and how to use them to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. We're here weekly to deliver all kinds of interesting and great things about trends and what they are, how to use them. And when was the last time you watched cartoons, Adam?
Oh, a really long time.
Really, you remember really? Yes.
I do remember them.
All right. So the Jetsons, if you think about the whole landscape of the Jetsons, a lot of these things that was in the Jetsons is happening now.
Yeah.
Right. Remember George Jetson? He was he's got his screen and he'd be talking to his boss kind of in a Zoom situation.
Yeah.
There was a robot dog that would go clean the house. Yep. Right. Basically everything in there except for flying cars. That's the one thing that really hasn't happened in mass.
They're out there. They're being tested, and they're going to be a lot more ability for people to fly within the next decade.
Yeah. So we have that, right? You know, I grew up with the Jetsons. I grew up even a little beyond that. So that's interesting to talk about, right? And we have another movie that have you seen 2001 Space Odyssey?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So amazing movie. I mean, it's not your usual movie for the appetite today of this instant, whatever. It's a very long, drawn out movie. Yes. But one of the premises, if you remember correctly, what was the name of the robot that ended up taking over?
Hal, wasn't it? Hal?
It was Hal.
Yeah.
Hal, exactly. And so I wanted to use this as a couple of bookends to talk about artificial intelligence. There seems to be a lot of people don't understand it, people are scared of it, people don't know how powerful it really is, you know, and then we have this whole landscape. And I think it's really important for our listeners and our audience to understand what AI really is and how important it is to you and I and to the people outside all around the world that are trying to run a business. And so let's start there, Adam, and see what we can understand about AI and why it's so important to understand what it is.
Well, there's one thing I've learned is that the ChatGPT from OpenGPT has gotten a lot of awareness. It's gotten a lot of visibility. People have seen it. They heard about it. People have had chances to go test it. And so some people who have tested it have come back and then they've said, hey, look, there's all this controversy. You know, there's high school kids that are being denied the ability to go to their graduation because one of the teachers is saying that they did their senior essay with ChatGPT. There's a lot of that stuff going around right now and people saying, well, can you know what's written by ChatGPT, what's not written by ChatGPT? And so I phrased it one way along a while back, and I'm still doing this phraseology with people. I say, you remember when we didn't have calculators? And if you took a test, you were just expected to work out all the answers on the test. And eventually we got to the point where calculators existed, but they were very expensive. So the only people who really had them were in college. And then they got really cheap. And now would we expect somebody to go through the educational system without using a calculator?
Clearly not.
No, right. So what we knew is we said, look, we'll take you through the early grades and we'll teach you how to do arithmetic. We'll teach you the number line, teach you arithmetic. And then we'll eventually start teaching a little bit of math. But we're not going to make you do by long hand something that can be done with a tool. And if you think of it that way, ChatGPT becomes something where you start saying, well, okay, if I need 500 words on something, you know, should I sit there and belabor over those words? Or should I take ChatGPT and tell it what I want it to say and let it write the first draft for me? In other words, a word calculator. And is that somehow unfair?
I don't believe so. I think it's a fantastic tool that people ought to really embrace, but I can see how fear can drive people away from that.
Well, right now the Screenwriters Guild is on strike and they're not producing content for television, movies, and other forms of entertainment. And one of their demands is that ChatGPT and similar AI products will not be allowed to be used in any form of creating these movies and television shows. And to me, that seems like it's probably pretty extreme because we've never developed a tool that we said, well, no, I don't want you to use that tool. You know, we've talked about, I've had some construction being done on a house. And, you know, the fellows that come along, some fellows get the job because they have a tool, right? They bought a tool that allows them to get the job done faster than somebody who doesn't have the tool. And so even though I may be paying a different rate, the person with the tool gets the business because at the end of the day, I get a better job at a lower cost because they use that tool. So if we've done that in construction, we've done it in manufacturing, right? In the old days, people sat there and people stood on an assembly line and they put a bolt onto a car. They had some task they did as the thing went down the assembly line. Well, we roboticized all that now. You know, you walk into a modern factory, it's not a very hot or very cold place with a lot of people doing a lot of manual work that's very bad for their body. There's little of that that goes on anymore. Most of it is some, you know, robots doing the work. And then the people in the factory are programming the robots with what they're going to do. So we find those robots to be very helpful and valuable, and we like those robots. And we haven't said, don't use those robots. Well, now we have a robot that can write. And people are finding that very threatening that this robot could write. And again, there's another little story that I have to tell, and that was about 15, 16 years ago, something like that. I was doing some work for a college, and they suckered me into becoming an adjunct professor, something I would never recommend you do, anybody do. I absolutely hated the job. And one of the reasons was I was teaching graduate school. These were MBA students. All of them were full-time employees, and they were working on their MBA to try to advance their career. So they were all well into their mid-20s or 30s and older. And I taught a course on innovation, right? Natural. I put the course together. So they're coming in, and part of it involved, they had to write a couple of papers, and then they had to do a videotape. Well, in the papers they would write, I tell them, I say, look, I'm a published author. I wrote a book. You're a graduate student. I expect you to be able to write in a convincing manner. You know, every sentence should have a noun and a verb. You should know the difference between an adverb and a verb. You should be able to use punctuation. And I would get the most unbelievably badly written things from these graduate students. And it got to the point I was handing them back to them and saying, you will rewrite this so that it is usable in a business context, or I'm not going to give you a grade. And they got so mad about this, they went to the dean. And they were like, oh, Hartung, he's downgrading us, not for our ideas and not for what we know about the material. He's downgrading us because we seem unable to be able to write good enough for him. And of course, the dean comes back and says, listen, they're paying to go to this school. I really want you flunking them because of this. And I said, well, somebody should have flunked them a long time ago because they couldn't read and write like a high schooler. So anyway, that's good enough for me. I'm out of it, man. I'm not going to deal with this crap anymore. And I took off. But what I'm seeing is that there are a lot of people who really can't read or write very well. Our educational system is not producing what it used to produce in the liberal arts. And so this is a tool where I think what we're going to have to say is, look, if you want something written reasonably well, you may find that in the work of the working world, to get it done cost effectively, you better have them use this tool, you know, so that they can feed in some information. And another thing to remember is no tool is better than the data you put into it, right? And so even with ChatGPT, with this large learning model, which has got all its data in the model already, what you're going to get out is dependent upon what you ask. So, you know, you want 500 words on some topic and you don't phrase it correctly, you won't get the right information, right?
Right.
You'll get an answer, but it won't be right. That's the same way we did in math. You're an engineer like I am. You know, we learned over time pretty quickly, you got to put the right information into the equations or you're not going to get reasonable answers when it comes back out.
Right.
And so you got to know how to do the work before you know how to use the tool, is what it comes back to. And so the tool like ChatGPT cannot be any more powerful than the people who are using it. The dummies that put in the wrong information, it'll improve the quality of their work. But, you know, they're not going to become Pulitzer Prize winners. They're not going to start writing for the Wall Street Journal, right? A Wall Street Journal editor might well run some draft versions by something, a tool like this, and then finish them up. But that's because as a journalist, they would know what they've read, they would know what they're writing, and they would say, okay, get this first draft so that I can start editing and moving on. The tool could be no better than the person who uses it. And that's true for AI itself. But then again, my fallback is if people are as silly, it's one of the things I see in reality, it won't be long before this tool will be so much smarter than them, they won't have a job. And that's what happened a long time ago. So in 1923, there was a play written called The Adding Machine. which the BBC made into a black and white movie in 1925. And I saw this movie about 1962 or something like that. And it's this drama, and there's this fella, and it starts with he's sitting at a desk, and a woman is sitting next to him, and she's reading a string of numbers. And he's a human adding machine. That's what he does. And so the movie goes in, he's doing this, there's dialogue that goes around all that. And eventually, you know, this goes along, and he's a little concerned about his life, and he's a little concerned that he didn't really do much with his life. Goes to work every day, sitting there in a suit, adding numbers up all day long. And then they come along with this adding machine. And the adding machine will do what he does. And he takes, you remember back when we used to have real physical notes, and we would, on our desk, we had this thing look like a nail, and you would put the notes on the nail so that you would get the messages. Or you don't know if you remember that at all. If you are, yeah, I think he had one of those on his desk. He picks it up and he shoves it into the heart of somebody and he kills them because he's frustrated with his life, right? Because a new tool comes along. That was 1923. And they made the movie in 1925, and it was about the simple adding machine. Over time, jobs become obsolete. And right now we have a lot of people in society that want to stop that, you know? They want to, the whole, you know, bad to be woke movement is, I don't want the world to go forward. We did that once before. It's called the Dark Ages, you know? For about 400 years, and lots of people died and got killed, and it was a pretty bad situation before we had the Renaissance and started to make headway. So I think all this negativity around the tool is somebody, people don't understand that tools are here to be used. Once they're created, the smart people will use them. And knowing
that, it goes back to the fear. You know, I think the fear is what drives a lot of these people to push technology away. You know, everybody talks about Skynet. You know, if you've seen the Terminator movies, right? Yeah. Here comes this crazy robot nation that, you know, takes over and kills all the humans. And I think, you know, a lot of it is that. And then there's stories all over the place about this AI becoming sentient and conversations happening between two AI bots. They start to form their own language. But it, like you said, it goes back to what are the tools and the data you put into it.
Right. And so if you we wanted to write a play in which there would be characters that had to display emotions, then the tool is going to be capable of doing that. But again, I want to come back to just how important tools are. This winter, I saw a news program, and they interviewed some Amazon employees. They had left the company. They were disgruntled employees. They're part of the movement to try to put a union into the company. And one of the things that these disgruntled employees complained about was that they couldn't, the speed with which things went, they said was impossible to work in. Well, I've also had the opportunity to watch some movies of Amazon distribution centers. And I remember distribution centers from a long time ago with people running around and them pulling parts, you know, the pull, pack, and ship part of the business.
Yep.
And, you know, I even worked early in my career on designing a few pull, pack, and ship facilities. But what happened nowadays is watch these robots inside an Amazon facility. They are whizzing, man. They are moving way faster than any human could move. So what it's done is it's back again to what's manufacturing. It's smart people programming robots. In an Amazon distribution center, you got to be smart enough to keep up with robots because they're moving really fast, bringing those packages along. And what you have to do is keep up with them. We have people that go to an Amazon facility, apply for a job, thinking that they're going to be in some old pick, pack, and ship world, and they just mentally can't keep up. They can do it for a couple of weeks, but then their mind gets tired. They can't keep up with that pace day after day, and so they quit. But they say, well, the answer to this is unionization, so that we'll slow the work down. I'm sorry, but no, we won't. We won't slow the work down.
That's the way it works.
I mean, even, you know, so the first example, the Screenwriters Guild, well, we're not going to use ChatGPT. Everybody has to write it out. That reminds me of feather bedding back to the railroads. Whenever the railroads got rid of coal engines and they still had a coal tender sitting in the front of the railroad car. Then we got junior writers that apparently don't have anything to do but sit there and watch the AI create text. That's feather bedding. And then this last one, it's the classic example of trying to say that they did the auto companies back in the 1960s and 70s, where they said, look, you know, if my job, if a tool can operate faster than I can operate, then I should be allowed to get paid anyway. You know, you can't fire me. Go ahead and you can use the tool, but I want to go sit over here in this other part of the building and wait for another job to come along. Like, you owe me a job, period. You owe me a job. And that's the reason the unions have gotten in so much trouble and we don't see very many anymore, is because a lot of people say, wait a minute, I don't think the union can say that the company owes you a job. No. So the world has changed in this direction, and this is, and AI is just a tool. Now, you know, back a long time ago, I worked for the DuPont Company in imaging. One of the problems we were solving was how do you take an image and make it something that's usable? Well, when you took an initial image, if you're printing something, you're doing it with dots and spots and those kind of stuff, right? And we had screen, we had pixels. And we're like, how do we keep moving it faster? Well, you always wanted better algorithms, because what you want to do is compress the image and bring it back out again. You don't want to send all that data if you could compress it and then uncompress it on the other end. And one of the things we learned real quickly was that we could use neural networks to analyze images. Then those images, we could dramatically compress the image much more. Well, neural network was a form of AI. All it did was it looked at the pattern in the image. So if it saw a big white spot, instead of trying to read every single pixel, it would say, oh, what's the edges of the white spot? Boom, I'm done. I move on and I'll go to the next thing. And so that's how we do all the compression that we do today, sending this stuff around. That started in the 1980s. Okay, we're doing these neural networks. We put in, you know, machine... We called it, intelligent machine work, right? Remember those days? Machine learning. Mm-hmm. And what that was, machine learning was saying if a task becomes repetitive, then let's quickly turn it to a machine, right? So we've had machine learning around since the 1980s as well, following what's going on. There's a company that I had the good luck to work with called Smart Data Solutions up in Minnesota. And they had started off opening envelopes to get the information for workflow software for healthcare companies. So it was the healthcare insurance companies' data going back and forth. So they founded their company a long, long time ago, opening these envelopes. And then the opening envelopes became scanning it, and then scanning it became putting it in the databases, right? And one of the things they started to observe was that they saw that this data was coming in. There was all this commonality about the data. And they said, you know what, if a decision's coming along, we should be able to have the machine make that decision. And so they started to work the workflow to learn all the data as it was coming in and see if it could make a decision. And sure as the world, it would, you know, look in and say, oh, okay, do these two data fields match? No. Well, I used to eject it. A human's going to look at it. So a good example is I've been diagnosed with cancer, but I've been given a prescription for a drug for heart disease. Oh, that doesn't match. Let's take a look at it. Then what you do is say, well, which one is wrong? Is the cancer diagnosis wrong, or is the heart disease drug wrong? You know, and you kind of work your way through that decision. Well, they said, well, we can see this pattern develop over and over again. So what we can do is the machine itself will get smart enough to recognize these things. It'll work down a decision tree. You remember decision trees? We've been making those since the 1960s. And then it would say it would make this decision. But because it's a computer, it does it much more quickly than a human can. Then they were able to go to their customers and say, hey, look, we can have the computer do this. Now, the first reaction is, oh, it'll be cheaper because it's done on a computer. But what they learned was the big value wasn't the cheaper. The big value was in the claims savings. The machine was so much better than the humans, because humans still made mistakes. They'd still look at it and they'd look at the drug and get the drug misspelled, look it up, not get the right drug, say, okay, fine, move on with it, you know, and the claims would get paid. And they found out that they were saving their customers literally hundreds of millions of dollars in claims because the machine made better decisions. And Smart Data Solutions still exists today. It still does smart workflow for the healthcare insurance industry. And it's an example. They started building that machine learning about 20 years ago. They've turned it into an AI development project, and that project's been around for at least 12 years now, and they're the best in their industry at it. And that's what I think our customers need to start to understand, is that now is the time to get in there and investigate where you could use artificial intelligence. And what are some of the common problems in your business, and how could we have a machine start to break that problem down so that it's cheaper for you to run your business and more effective?
Yeah. I think there's lots of areas of, you know, some people call it automation, but it's still AI, right? You can do AI with your marketing. You can have AI tools for sales. You can have AI tools for customer service. Obviously, that's one of the big ones. You can use AI tools for finance and bookkeeping. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And then, again, it goes back to how competitive do you want to be? Everybody else is going to start trending in that direction, right? We talk about trends, and this is the one we've been talking about since the start of this podcast. one of the four top ones.
Yeah. I mean, let's think about if you were just running a fast food restaurant. A fast food restaurant has a set menu, set number of items, and you don't know when the next person walks up if they're going to order, you know, a hamburger or a fish sandwich or what they're going to order. But what you can do is you could have a machine, an AI machine, look at the pattern in terms of your sales. And then you start saying, you know, over the course of from 8 to 9 in the morning, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12, you could start saying, hey, look, you know, we almost always sell at least 75 hamburgers, and we sell 15 fish sandwiches. We don't know the order those are going to happen in, but we know that's going to happen. And now what you do is you start prepping for that. You've got everything ready for that to happen, right? So you don't start with zero. You start with some idea of what the demand is going to be hour by hour in your business. You could do that, you know, if you were running like a Midas, the brand name, but a place that does mufflers or a place that does brakes. You can look at the historical data and start saying, well, you know, what happens on a daily basis? You can look at a seasonality. You know, more people get this kind of work done on their car in the spring, or, you know, more people buy new tires in the fall. And you could, there's a lot of places that a small business could sit down and start to say, there are patterns in my business. And to the extent this machine can help me identify those patterns, then it allows me to focus on the customer. And I'm not trying to sit here and guess, did I have enough hamburger meat, or did I get enough, you know, do I have enough employees showing up today? You know, those kinds of problems are can be greatly assisted by using one of these AI tools.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people that I speak with and you speak with, you know, CEOs and people that run companies, they complain about a massive shortage of good qualified employees. So just imagine if part of your work you can offload to an AI tool, or maybe a gig worker who manages that AI tool. And for gig workers out there, ones that want to become gig workers, this could be also a good outlet. Go out and see how you can automate some of these tools.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we went through a whole generation of teaching people how to code, right? So we put all these people into companies and they would sit there and ask the problem. And they would write code. They would write code over somebody else's code. And every once in a while, they'd rewrite some code. It's a lot of people looking at every problem as if it's never been seen before, right? Now what happens is what we know are these new AI tools can look at a lot of code, turn it into pieces, and then reuse those pieces over and over. Much better than a team of 100 people could do. Or, and if you think about it, what's really happening is you've got hundreds of thousands of people doing code writing, each of them independently. This becomes a way for a machine to look at it and say, oh, instead of hundreds of thousands of people, many of whom are rewriting code that somebody else wrote, we'll be able to put that together. So what's going to happen is you're not going to need nearly as many code writers as you did in the past, even though we graduated thousands and thousands of them from colleges. You know, years ago, there was a job called a mule skinner, and that was back when they drilled oil wells with mules walking around in a circle. And the mule skinner was the guy who told the mules what to do. And I have to describe this job now because of the fact that nobody could actually imagine it in today's modern world. We've had so many jobs like that where you get trained, you learn how to do something, but then you find out, hey, that's been made obsolete. And when the key here is to say, I don't want to say it's made obsolete when I'm walking out the door. The smart thing to do is start saying, this could make me obsolete, and I better start thinking about the next thing I'm going to do. I recently read an article in the New York Times in which the author documented that there were half as many people in journalism, writing for newspapers and magazines and radio and television, as there had been, I think it was 15 years prior was the date he was using. Half of them were gone. The point now is to say, okay, what's it going to look like in another 15 years? The Screenwriters Guild would like to think it's not going to change. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that it's going to be a lot fewer people. You'll need a lot. Whenever one person can generate perhaps 20 or 30 articles a week, because they don't have to generate the language. It becomes the calculator. So you sit down and say, okay, I've interviewed. Here's my interviews. I put in all the data. I structure basically what I want to have happen. Here's my storyline. Boom, let the first draft come out of this machine. Then I can, and while that's happened, so now I can sit here and edit that. And what would take me an entire day, I get done in 2 hours. So I can produce a lot more content. Who's going to survive? Only the very best journalists. Only the ones who, A, have enough dog determination to keep working very hard at covering multiple stories and have the intelligence to be able to produce that output so that they don't get hung up after they do one article and say, okay, time now to go home. No, it's only been 2.5 hours. It's time now to write the next article, right? right? So like the Amazon workers that want to slow down the distribution center, the journalists that want to slow down the rate at which articles are being produced will go away. Only the best and the brightest will be able to survive in that world. So then you have to decide quickly, do I want to try to stick around and gut it out and be one of the last ones here, probably making less money, but it's because I won't change? Or do I see the change in the world and I say, okay, there's a door, let me walk through that door. What is the next thing I'm going to do?
Yeah, just imagine the quality of the content that's going to be coming out from that.
Yeah.
You know, just everybody, I go back to the fear thing, because I talk to people and they just have this general fear. There's some people that are excited about it. You know, I don't know when the last time you went to the movies, Adam, but you know, we've talked about that. That's all been shaken up quite a bit. And I think we just need to embrace it and see how we can use it to become more successful. It's certainly nothing that we need to be afraid of, but we need to really figure out how to embrace it.
It's a terrible joke, but the joke that I would tell people is, how often do you hear when a plane crashes that it was pilot error? Almost all the time, right? And I said, so the solution is to get rid of the pilots. Now, that seems a little crazy, but that's the road we're headed on, right? There was a time when to get in an elevator, you had to have an elevator operator who literally stood in the elevator all day long, opening the door, making it go up and down, right? And he was working dials and wheels to make it happen. Well, as time went by, he didn't have to do those mechanics. So we still kept elevator operators who just pushed the button. What door would you like? What floor are you looking for, sir? You want floor 7. Boom, and he pushed the 7. Pretty quick, we realized that was not a necessary job, right? And so it went away. And that's what I think we're trying to get people to understand, is that these things are going to move forward and they're going to automate the process. And then when that happens, there's not going to be a need for that job anymore.
It's part of the way it goes. Now, Adam, so let's talk about before we log off here for today's podcast. Let's talk about that small business owner. What should their first step be, in your opinion, to start embracing and understanding AI and then collecting their management team and their people that work for them and actually executing on that plan?
Look, most small business owners love managing the business, right? And so our podcast exists because we say, you love managing the business, you don't spend enough time looking at trends. But here's a situation where I could say this big trend, which is going to be, I mean, just like the internet, I was asked 30 years ago, what's the internet like? And I said, it's like fire. It told, you know, before you had fire, you ate raw meat. After fire, everything was different. Well, the internet was like that. It's going to change everything we do. Artificial intelligence is more like fire, okay? And then it's going to really change things a lot. So the first thing you can do is figure out, how can I apply it to what my business is? What are the components of my business? Labor, materials, you know, try to see if you can improve your performance. You like doing that anyway. This is a new tool to help you manage or improve your performance. The second place that I would always say you go is take a look at your customers. Can you get to know them better? Can you start to look for, you know, how they behave? Like I talked about earlier, patterns in their purchasing behavior. Perhaps you can use the artificial intelligence to understand, you can have it go through a series of understanding the customer's goals and ambitions and starting to figure out what some of their poorly met needs are. So the problems that you don't, first focus on the problems in your own business, but then start looking at your customers and start saying, what could I do to better serve my customers? What could I identify the unmet needs and then how could I deliver on those needs? If you break it into those two pieces and then decide what you want to do first, or do them both at the same time, set up a couple of teams. If you've got some people in your company, one person, how can I use AI to do the job better? And another one, how do I use AI to know my customer better? Right. And that's where you start.
Yeah. And it goes back to the idea of that, blank space. And certainly we always welcome comments and questions and thoughts about that. So if you have any thoughts on that or if you're stuck, get a hold of myself, Annie at sparkpartners.com or Adam at sparkpartners.com. And we can help you become unstuck. And certainly there's lots of growth opportunities with AI. And we're going to be talking about it a lot during our podcast because it's one of these things. It's going to, it's already a roaring fire. I can't imagine in another 18 months, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, it's going to become like the internet is now.
And every time, every new tool that comes along creates big winners, right? Look at Facebook, right? We couldn't have existed without without the internet. You know, social media had to have this sort of totally free ability for everybody to talk to each other. You couldn't have make it work before you had the internet. So those kinds of big opportunities out there. But then once you get out there and you have a tool, you can start thinking of all kinds of ways you could use it. I always go back again to just using our mobile phones. There are people who, when they got the mobile phone, they thought of it as nothing more than a way to have a conversation. But those that quickly understood how you could use it as a tool to connect using the internet, using social media, they got the big wins. They sold more stuff, right? It was, you know, getting people, if you had a restaurant on Madison Street in Chicago, then you plugged in a database, you went into your create a website with a whole bunch of keywords in it so that if somebody said, hey, I'm on Madison Street in Chicago, I want lunch, they could go in and they could do a Google search or they could do a Facebook search and your restaurant would pop up, right? That was how people grew their business with this level of technology, the mobile phone. Now what they can do is start thinking, how am I going to use this new piece of technology, AI, as a lever to get more sales?
Very well said, Adam. And with that, we'll log off for today and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Manny.
Cheers.